It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Are you married to Laurie? Do you even know what that means? Driving me crazy? Hello? Hi, honey.
Good morning, John.
Where did that
Good
come
morning, Laurie.
I don't know. I just thought I'd change things up a little.
Change things up? He had two cups of coffee
this morning,
good. I think.
Good. It was a great introduction. You caught me immediately.
It was absolutely unique. And I'll tell you one thing. I think that he would have probably reacted that way if he knew anything at all, which I am positive my darling husband does not know, about the Aspark Owl, which is an EV hypercar. This is really great. I wouldn't be so excited about it if I didn't have it just come on my computer this morning. The Aspark, Aspark Owl, Owl. It is an EV hypercar, and this is what this is. The Aspark Owl is made by a Japanese company called Aspark. I don't know what that means, but anyway, in any case.
Okay.
And they have created the quintessential sports car.
That's an electric?
It's electric. So here's what. There are only 50 that are going to ever be built for the world. 20 for Asia, for the Asia market, go figure. 20 for the European market, go figure. And 10 for North America, go figure. So here's what
this
car does.
It's all based on money. It's about the wealth of those different areas.
Yeah.
I looked it up. My God, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Unbelievable.
I mean, if you could fall in, it's absolutely breathtaking.
It truly is. And here's what, it's all electric. It has the fastest accelerating production of any vehicle in the world. It will go from 0 to 60 in 1.72 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So now it's a heavy car for what it is, which is a carbon fiber shell, and it weighs over 4,000 pounds.
It's all the battery.
Wow.
Exactly. You're right. Which are 69 kilowatt lithium-ion batteries,
1,985 horsepower.
Don't say anything about the price. That's my big finale. Don't say a word.
Unbelievable.
It only gets a drive time of 280 miles, but the batteries can be fully charged in 80 minutes, which beats what we've ever had to recharge on.
80 minutes, boy, you could have a long breakfast. For that.
You could, or a relaxing lunch,
or lunch.
Even a romantic dinner. Who
is
knows?
Do you think this is a new?
I'd rather have
this kind of idea is a new thing for Elon Musk. It's like the Elon Musk counterpart. You can do that. We can do that better. You think it's that?
I don't think it is. It has 2,012 horsepower. 2,012. We get excited when it goes over 200.
Yeah.
It was introduced, of course, in Dubai, of course, in 2019.
Uh-huh.
The top speed is 249 miles an hour.
Yeah, we could use that around.
Yeah,
time.
Maybe you could do that
in
store. Dubai.
You could do it
in
most of Asia, except Japan. You could go along the Great Wall of China. Go figure. But here's what the design, for those who don't know what I'm talking about, it has the doors go up like the DeLorean. So it's a two-passenger vehicle.
Gullwing, I think those are called.
Yep, the Gullwings. It goes up like a DeLorean. It is beautifully designed. The model they're showing in the photograph is a sapphire blue with blaze orange interior. The seats look like when you're about to recline in first class on Virgin Atlantic. It has.
Yeah, we all know how that is, honey.
Well, I do. But the thing is.
That was my point.
Oh, okay. But the thing is, the leg rest goes all the way down to your ankles. So the seat starts, the headrest starts at the very crown of your head and goes all the way down to your ankles. It's a totally sculpted seat, and it has a double. This is really cool, though. This, I think, is all cars should have. It has a double seat belt, one harness going over each of the shoulders and connecting in the middle. How smart is that?
You'll also notice that everybody who's listening to this should go get online and look at the Aspark Owl, and then you'd know what, you know, what we're talking about, what we're seeing. But the guy in the picture who's driving the car has a big helmet on, just so you know.
Well, you know, it's probably because
and a fireproof suit. I'm just saying, you know, probably not for your average driver.
And it may come with the suggested retail price of
I want to know for whom is this car built?
Rich
because
people.
That's what we always talk about. Who would buy this car?
Very rich people, because...
Since there's only 50 of them, it could be very wealthy investors, too.
Because the price is, drumroll, 3,500,000 quid, which is $4,253 and 4,253,147,000,000. It's over $4 million, but that excludes tax.
Well, you know what?
And without
you know,
options,
that would be perfect for me. But I'm short $4 million.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, and that's. But you could afford. Could you afford the tax?
No, you can afford that.
No,
we couldn't afford the steering wheel.
I don't think even that. But this is. I mean, the fact that there is even a demand for this.
Oh, I think 50 of them will sell a crown.
Oh, I think, because there are a lot
of people. They're
billionaires. Yeah,
you know, money is
standing room only.
Truthfully, money is, and I mean this very sincerely, money is relative. And George Wall, who's my wonderful friend in Maryland, used to say, money's only important when you don't have any. I mean, and you think about it. Because people who have billions of dollars, $4 million isn't that much.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But for people that have $100,000 or make $100,000, this is unachievable. It's just, you know, so I think there are 50 people in the world who would invest in this kind of vehicle?
Yes,
they would.
Just so
they have, absolutely,
no,
they would.
Absolutely.
Probably 500.
As you said, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. But the issue, listen, the car insurance alone would be the equivalent of most of America's average annual
cost
income.
Cost of a big house.
really big house.
Yeah.
This is, you know, speaking about investments, and I think this would very much be an investment. I believe that this is, obviously, this is a car that's...
Are you going to segue into the truck now?
No, I was going to actually segue into a house.
Okay. investment, that's what I mean.
Investment. There's a house for sale. I don't know who the listing agent is, or else I would have said, but there's a house for sale in Washington, Connecticut, which is a beautiful, beautiful historic town, which was near where we used to have our country house in Lake Waramug, on Lake Waramug in Connecticut. And the house is, at least it was known to us as The Rocks, and my parents wanted to buy this house when I was about 14 years old, so this puts it back, you know, half a century. But the fact is, it was absolutely stunning. It was a mansion. It was off the village green. It had, I remember, these lilting lawns that in the spring were literally covered with daffodils. I mean, acres and acres of daffodils. It was gorgeous. Anyway, it was for sale for $125,000. But it's now back on the market for just shy of $6 million. So that would have been a really, really good investment. You know,
but at that time, a half a century ago, $125,000
was a lot of money.
Fortune of money.
Sure.
And it's true. It's absolutely true. So which brings me to this next wonderful investment, the 2021 Silverado, Chevy Silverado, 2500 four-wheel drive, LTZ crew cab in Johnny's favorite color, red hot red, which is...
Yes.
Also known a.k.a. Arrest Me Red in Johnny's language, with a jet black interior, which is otherwise known as black. And the suggested retail price, I'm going to just say it right off the bat, of $71,000 and change. Now,
fully loaded.
Wow.
Okay, fully loaded. Now, if it's
fully
not,
loaded.
If you don't want the options and you're going to want the options, you're going to want the options. But if you want to, you know, be really skinflint about it, it's $53,700 MSRP for base standard equipment.
Skinflint at JK-63,700 is a skin flint.
Old pirate's term, I'm sure. Anyway.
Yeah, if you're cheap, you only spend 53.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, this is, okay.
Okay,
I'm
well,
say
the question
this
is, does it include carpet, you know, carpet?
Yeah,
to the floor?
Yeah, yeah.
It does?
Yeah, it does.
$1,700? Or does come with the extras?
Oh, no, no.
Kidding.
Yeah, no.
But
now,
the,
that's
yeah.
a bargain.
But then there's $16,000 of options. So
yeah.
so it well should include the carpets in the base price for standard equipment.
One would hope.
But I'm going to say one thing, and then I'm going to turn this over to Johnny. This is a friggin' big truck. Johnny, take it away.
I think we talked about this in one of the other trucks that we've had recently. But and I included a picture, and I hope that the people who are listening do go to the newspaper, and look at the article, because to me the front of these trucks it's been redesigned, and you look at it and it's got Chevrolet across the front in the grill, but the front of it, because it's divided the way the lights are done and all that, it really looks like some sort of prehistoric, I don't know, Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's almost got that look to it. And one of the things that I said in the article, aggressive. And one of the things I said in the article was, and I'm telling you that it's true, it had mine, the one that we had here, had the big West Coast mirrors, which I think are similar to the ones in the picture. But we had the big, what we used to always call West Coast mirrors. They're called trailering mirrors now, I think. But they're big, and they stick out far from the truck so that you can see down the sides of the trailer. Well, you've got this huge, I'm talking 20, I think, what did I put on there? Oh, yeah, it's 21 foot long, 21 feet long, and six feet 7 inches high from the ground with 10-inch clearance. So So when you're going down the road, when you're going down the street, now the speed limit around here is 35 miles an hour. So you're going down the street at 35 miles an hour, and there are trees on both sides of the road, down Linden Road, which is right outside where we live. And we travel that a lot going to Pinehurst. So you get on Linden Road, and I'm doing 35 miles an hour, and I'm telling you that the oncoming traffic in the lane, you see them start moving over toward the white line as you're approaching, because this huge thing is, like, coming at you, and it's like, well, I wonder if they're going to miss the trees by coming over on my lane. I need to move over something. So it's an aggressive, impressive vehicle. Now that is the truth, if I ever told you. But it's a practical truck.
Well, I do want to add that we have mailboxes along our street, no sidewalks, mailboxes. And this is every time I drove this truck, I was wondering how many mailboxes I was going to take out, because
you sort of glance as you go by, you make sure that one mirror is not going to catch the mailbox,
because you think you're really toward the left of the road as you're, and the mailboxes are on the right side, and you really think you're kind of really over, and you look over and you miss a mailbox by about one half of an inch. So and that's an accurate measurement. The fact is, this is the hood. I think the hood is the deceiving thing, because on other trucks and large SUVs that we have driven, many have designed the hoods to slope down. Not Chevy with the Silverado, with this 2021 Silverado. They must have injected helium under the hood, or perhaps steroids, because this hood goes up. It kind of flashes up, and it's got these, what did you call them, Johnny, those flash points that you said were like dinosaur gulls?
On the real trucks, back when they did this kind of thing, they cut holes in the hood, and that's where the carburetor came out, the tops of the carburetors, and you'd see them on dragsters, that kind of thing. And it had something similar looking, but of course it wasn't. And it was just plastic, but it made it look like that there's some sort of, I don't know, something under the hood that would, you know, needs to be vented.
Right, and at first, I said to you, Johnny, is this to allow the steam coming out of the engine?
Yeah.
But it's not. It seems to be, as Johnny says, a decorative piece.
Right.
Pieces, because there's one on each side and then one on the front. But so the hood looks like somebody took a really big needle and injected testosterone into the hood. It's very, very masculine. In fact, the entire design of the truck is very masculine.
I'd agree with that.
And I can attest to this, and here's why. Because whenever I would drive the truck and I would, a car would, you know,
it would
turn
whisper,
the corner.
Where's Johnny?
No. Yeah, exactly. No, and a car would pass by or I would be at a stop sign and a car would turn in and look up at me. Invariably, it was a man driving the other car, and his jaw would drop because he would not expect a princess like me to be driving this humongous truck. Or
Baroness,
like me to drive this massive vehicle. This said, it feels very large when you're driving as a driver or a front row passenger. The second row seat, you could practically lay down, and there's so much legroom. And, of course, there's the trunk, which is massive. But the fact of the matter
is... Bed, not trunk.
Oh, I'm sorry, bed, you're right. Mm. Bed, the bed. You could actually put a bed in the bed. but except for trying to park at the grocery store park, or park anywhere for that matter, where
downtown,
where there are other
diagonal parking,
where there are other vehicles, unless you're parking along the side of a country road and nobody's in sight, this is an easy vehicle to. This is an easy truck to drive. It was very beautifully handling, quiet, really quiet. And I mean, considering it was a turbo diesel.
Yeah, turbo diesel Duramax. The Duramax
6.6 liter engine.
Big.
And 10 speed, and the 10 speed probably has to do with why it seemed to be so smooth and easy and quiet. But it was a delight to drive, and in fact, I do need to announce this, Johnny, to your chagrin. But when this truck came to the house, I was actually the first of the two of us to drive it for the first time in 7 or 8 years. Johnny allowed me to be the first behind the wheel, and I thought that was very
chivalrous
of you. He got into the passenger, the front passenger seat, and I drove. And when we got to our destination, he wiped the blood from his knuckles.
No, that's not true.
And he said, "Good job, honey. You didn't take anybody out."
Yeah.
No, but it really, and it,
well,
it's a beautiful.
You know, this is such a romantic moment. I haven't heard this before.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. You couldn't have been driving each other crazy.
No, Johnny is not a fan of it. Johnny loves to drive. He does not love it when I drive. And although I'm not allowed to tell him anything when he's driving, like, you know, where to park, or like last night, Johnny, where to park when we went out to dinner and things of that nature, you know, God help him, he's allowed to tell me how to drive. It's just part of the give and take of married life, isn't it, honey?
Whatever you say, dear.
But back to the Silverado. This is it is extraordinarily comfortable. The seating is wonderful. Did this have a heated steering wheel?
Yeah, heated steering, heated seats, air-conditioned
seats. Were lovely.
Heated second seats. So the crew cab, the seats in the second row, they're heated as well.
Now stop, because this brings us to the options package, and I'm going to go through this because with each one, we should comment, and this is why the options package. Hey, look, folks, if you can afford a $54,000 base price truck, go for it. Go to $71,000. Okay, so here we've got the Duramax 6.6 liter turbo diesel. That's the lion's share of the option package. It's $10,000 bucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Round it up, it's $10,000. You pay an extra $10,000 to have the Duramax diesel turbo diesel engine. However, is it worth it? If you're investing in, and I always use the term long haul, but if you're investing in a truck like this for the long haul, you're planning on keeping it for any number of years and doing work with it.
And that's exactly true, honey, with hauling.
Right. Hauling and trailering are the two things this truck is intended for. And this truck had... in the back, and then I'm going to let you talk some more, but in the bed of the truck, it was set up for what they call a gooseneck trailer. The gooseneck trailer, there's two ways to haul things. You haul it in a trailer that's hooked to a hitch at the back end of the truck. The only problem with that is that if you have a lot of weight in the trailer and something happens where you have to make a sudden movement left or right, you can get that trailer swaying. Well, the principles of dynamics are that if it's pulling against the back of the truck, right at kind of a fulcrum point, you can actually lose the traction of the truck. The trailer can pull the truck to the right or to the left. I think everybody can understand that. So they went to gooseneck trailers for large loads, like hauling cattle, for example, and you're doing it with either a dually or a truck like this. But the gooseneck actually attaches in the center of the bed of the truck, which moves that point much further up toward the middle of the truck, which then gives you a lot more control in a situation where you have to quickly turn left or right. The trailer tends to follow you, not fight you. Does that make sense?
This is the ultimate workhorse truck.
Yeah, yeah.
This is it. If you
probably want, one of many, but this is one.
Yes,
absolutely, sure.
It's right up there. And if you need a working truck, not a workman's truck, if you are
heavy duty, right?
Farm. If you've got a lot of land, if you have a need for hauling, especially, as Johnny pointed out, this is the truck you need. So
let me interrupt again. There are three levels in the Chevy Silverado. There's the 1500, which is basically your half-ton pickup truck. And then there's the 2500, which is the one that we're reviewing with heavy duty. But there's also a 3500,
which is the massive ultimate one.
Right.
So back to this options. So if you have a ranch, if you've got a farm, if you have any need, this is not the truck you're driving.
Can you say Yellowstone?
Yeah. if this is not a suburban truck. No, you're not driving this in Yonkers. You're definitely not driving it in New York City unless you want to take people out, storming down Fifth Avenue. This is a country and farm and forest and mountain truck. So for that reason, because of the build of the truck, you need that turbo diesel engine. You truly do. If you're going to work a truck, you have to have it. So that's 10 grand right off the top of the 16 grand package. So what do we have next? We've got what they call the LTZ Plus package. That's in the name of the vehicle we drove, the 2021 Silverado 2500 four-wheel drive. LTZ, that's the package, crew cab. So the LTZ package has the front bucket seats with center console. Do I recommend it? Absolutely. Because if you're going on a long haul, if you are working hard, you want that comfort. Johnny, do you agree?
Yeah, well, and that package is only $2,545.
Yes,
it's not like it's terribly expensive.
No, it's not. And this is what's in all of that $2,645. The bucket seats with center console, ventilated front seats, rear sliding power window. That's really important
on any
vehicle.
Yeah.
Really is important. The universal home remote, I don't know that that's...
For the barns? Sure.
Yeah.
Open the barn doors and you can drive.
Oh, that's right. That's a good point, honey. The heated second row seats. I think your second row passengers would be thrilled about that. The power up and down tailgate. That was the first thing with the power lock. That's the first thing you noticed about the truck,
yeah,
honey.
Yeah, sure is.
And it is. It's a very big convenience because hoisting those things up manually, they're heavy.
Yeah.
The LED lighting in the cargo bed, another big perk, another big plus. But here's the big one in this package. The front and rear park assist, you need to have it. The lane change alert with side blind zone alert and the rear cross traffic alert. These are safety features that when you're driving a vehicle this big, they're not an option. They're a must. Do you agree, Johnny?
Yes, absolutely.
So this next brings us to the $1,470 option, which is called the Z71 Sport Edition. So this is what you can get this is what comes in the $1,400 package. Black badging and trim, so that's cosmetic. Body color bumpers, door handles and grille, cosmetic. 18-inch high-gloss black aluminum wheels, cosmetic. Mud terrain tires, necessary. Black assist steps, you better have them. And then that's the next package. Those black assist, No, as long as you've got the assist steps, I don't care what color they are.
Running boards. Right?
Yeah, the running boards. So for $1,470, you can debate that. Now, for $1,340, this is the gooseneck fifth wheel package. That is what Johnny just talked about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that you have to have.
If you're going to be trailering things, if you're going to be trailering loads, I think that's you'd want that.
Because here's what's in that package. The stamped bed holes with the caps, the 7-pin trailer harness, the Chevy Tech spray-on bed liner. Those and the Bedview camera. That's really great. But the bed liner, the sprayed-on bed, I really recommend that for any truck. When you have the rubber ones that kind of fit in, it ends up being a little problematic with the fit with some, not all.
It's cool, just one moment about that. Not many years ago, when you bought a truck, you had to take it to a special place to get it the bed liner sprayed in. That wasn't it wasn't even on those trucks. And the manufacturers decided that was such a good idea that they incorporated that into almost all the trucks now. And it put a lot of people out of business, but it was such a good idea that it had to be incorporated into the truck to protect the beds of the truck. Good idea.
And it tends not to crack like some of the mat, the other mats do. Okay, the safety package too.
Got to have that.
Now let me say, for $645, you're nuts not to have it.
Right.
However, Chevy, for $645, Chevy, come on.
Yeah.
Why didn't you include
it in the $53,000?
Yes, exactly.
I agree with that.
Because here we go: forward collision alert, lane departure warning, automatic emergency braking.
Critical. Automatic emergency braking.
Critical.
Critical on any vehicle.
Absolutely. Auto high beam. Critical. Following distance indicator. Critical. Safety alert seat.
Which means it buzzes your butt if you...
Yeah, if you get too close or you're in a problematic situation.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chevy, please, for $645, why are you making that an option? And consumer... why are you not getting that? Okay, and last but not least, for $325.
There's actually a lot for $325,
I thought. Yeah, and here's what it is. The off-road suspension, twin tube shocks. This is what gives you the much more comfortable ride and the less road noise situation. Hill descent control, vital. Skid plates, C71 badging, who cares? And
skid plates are important if you are off road.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're hauling, or even if you're traveling off road, skid plates are necessary. You're in the rocks, or you've got things being thrown up underneath the truck. Skid plates are important.
So, bottom line is, when you're buying this vehicle and you're getting a car loan in order to do so, look at the difference between the standard price of $53,700 and the fully loaded price of $71,000. Find out if you can afford the difference on the monthly payments and buy it fully loaded.
I've got to ask a question. Why would anybody want to buy it at the base price? Because you know, the base price is just for looks.
Well, here's the thing. If somebody's got $53,000 in their wallet and they don't want to take a car loan and they don't have any more money to spend on a vehicle, this is a great working farm truck.
Mm-hmm. But is that really sufficient as a base model?
If you're using it on a ranch or a farm and you're not really taking it anywhere but other than your farm or ranch.
And it's sort of a designated... a truck designated to do certain things, so you wouldn't need some of these packages.
Yeah. So I mean, if this is a working man's, truck, exactly.
Right.
If you're taking it
outside
of the gates,
you have to define who you are and what you need this truck for.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're running a hay farm,
for example, or if you're running a sod farm, where you're going to pull a trailer. You're going to load up the bed, you're going to load up the trailer, but that's pretty much all you're going to do, and you're not going to go very far. You're just moving from one side to the other, one side of the farm. You're carrying it to somebody local. You're doing those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot of this kind of stuff. But and I'll go back to what I said before, anybody that's ever seen Yellowstone, if you're on Yellowstone, you need this kind of truck. You look at the trucks that are shown on the television series, Yellowstone. They're all dualies, by the way.
Love Yellowstone.
Yeah.
But they're working trucks. They're designed to haul cattle, horses, anything that you can, hay, anything. And they carry them distances. When you live in Montana, you don't just run 5 minutes to the grocery store.
Because I'm going to close this now because we're out of time.
Oh, sorry. But
basically, with this truck, if you're going to use it before you get out the front gates of your ranch or farm, and you're going to just use it on your property, then, yeah, get the base model. However, once you leave those gates, the gates to your farm or ranch, then you need to have the fully loaded vehicle. And this is a beauty. It really was. So that's what we've got. Our time is up. And we have another truck to talk about next week. Johnny?
Oh,
yeah, next week we have the Denali. So the GMC Denali. Yeah.
Very exciting.
And so, it's red, too. So we'll have comparisons to do. Ooh, I'm excited.
Two happy weeks of Johnny.
Yeah.
Hezzy, have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next week.
All the best. Thank you so much.
You too,
what
buddy.
A great, great day. You know,
and Hezzy, really wonderful today. And
Hezzy,
as soon as we get off your you get off your show, I want you to call and put in your reservation for the Aspark Owl.
Oh, you
yeah,
got
we'll
it.
Pitch in.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Have a good
week.
I'll
call your number because I'm going to need a couple of million in the process.
We're
all the best,
Hezzy.
Guys.
Our number's unlisted, Hezzy.
Oh, yeah,
have
that's
a good
right.
week, everybody.
I forgot. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that's so exciting. Well, we're going to move on. You know, we'll see. You never know. Maybe they're going to be doing a test drive of the Owl Park. That would be phenomenal. Maybe we should have that as a minimum baseline. If they think well of the Owl Park, then maybe I'll get one. We'll have to go into Hawk for that one, but you never know. Oh, well, you know, wait a minute. I just realized it. I rarely buy these tickets for, you know, these lottery tickets. Well, I was passing by and it said, I think it was 907 or maybe it was $970 million if you win the lottery. So can you imagine I actually bought a ticket? I said, look, it's $2 for the ticket. I'm not going to go broke on $2. So at first I thought there were only $1 a ticket. So I said, okay, because I pulled out a fiver, figured I'd get, you know, $5 to spend it. But then I upgraded it and spent $6, three chances to win. Now, $907 or $970 million, if I do that, then I can afford one of those owl parks. So we'll have to get, you know, John and Lori Wiles to test it. And if they think it's good enough, then I may buy it. And it's going to be interesting. Otherwise, I'm going to be at a much more lower level of a vehicle. So and that's going to be a bummer. Anyway, let's move on to see what else is happening in our world, and there is a lot. One second. Let me move on here. Where are we? where is it? One second here. This is very, very interesting. Evidently, a Down syndrome scientist in the first step to sainthood, which is unbelievable. The French scientist who discovered the cause of Down syndrome has taken the first step to sainthood, the Vatican said on Thursday. Pope Francis has recognized the heroic virtues of Professor Jérôme Lejeune, who died in 1994, age 67. So this clears the way for Lejeune to be beatified in the future, provided that the Vatican attributes a miracle to him. Beatification is one step removed from sainthood, which normally comes after the attribution of a second miracle. So in 1958, Lejeune and two other researchers discovered that Down syndrome sufferers are born with an extra chromosome. Down syndrome is a genetic disorder associated with mental and physical disabilities recorded in 23 out of every 10,000 births in the European Union in 2015. So Lejeune's research helped the prenatal detection of the disorder, sometimes leading to abortions, something he strongly objected to. Well, the professor became a passionate anti-abortion campaigner, working with the Vatican on the issue and becoming a personal friend with Pope John Paul II, who was recently made a saint. A foundation in his name now supports research and treatment for genetic intelligence disorders and is engaged in anti-abortion advocacy. So very, very interesting that it should come about. Unbelievable. Now let's see, there are other things. And this is interesting. A cartoonist has resigned from the French daily Le Monde in a free speech row. This is interesting. A leading French cartoonist on Wednesday said he would no longer work for Le Monde. Le Monde is the French way of saying the world. After the newspaper apologized for a cartoon he drew that tackled the sex abuse scandal. France's intellectual elite was rocked this month by a claim that political commentator Olivier Duhamel sexually abused his stepson, prompting social media users to speak out under the hashtag, quote, this hashtag MeTooIncest. Well, in a cartoon published in Le Monde's newsletter on Tuesday, Xavier Gorset had reflected on the controversy with a drawing of two penguins. Smaller penguin asks the other, if I was abused by the adopted half-brother of the partner of my transgender father, who has now become my mother, is that incest? Gotta read that question again. The smaller penguin asks the other, if I was abused by the adopted half-brother of the partner of my transgender father, who has now become my mother, is that incest? Well, in an apology to readers, Le Monde's editor-in-chief Caroline Monod said that the cartoon should not have been published. This drawing can indeed be read as relativizing the seriousness of acts of incest, using inappropriate terms towards victims and transgender people, she said. Some social media users had also accused Gorset of transphobia and mocking the victims of sex abuse, writing on Twitter that he had decided to, quote, immediately stop working with Le Monde. And continuing, he said, it is a personal, unilateral, and definitive decision. Freedom cannot be negotiated. My drawings will continue. He also posted a small cartoon for Le Monde, which again showed two penguins, this time both adults, with one asking, do you have your health passport, for a sense of humor? Well, Duhamel is under a criminal investigation after his stepdaughter, Camille Kouchner, published the allegation that he abused her twin brother when they were 14 years old. Freedom of speech and its limits have been burning issues since Islamist gunmen massacred staff at the Charlie Hebdo magazine in 2015 after it had pulled cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. In spite of attacks carried out by radical Islamists, prompted President Emmanuel Macron to vow that France would never renounce its right to caricature. Wow, amazing stuff, my God. This is very interesting. Over in China, Chinese rescuers are intensifying their desperate bid to save dozens of gold miners trapped after a blast. So Chinese rescue workers are drilling deep into the ground today in an increasingly desperate bid to save 21 gold miners who've been trapped for the last 11 days. At least one miner is known to have died after a blast in the Chinese eastern Shandong province, as local authorities are accused of having delayed the blast announcement. Unbelievable. So, very, very fascinating. Let's look at what else is going on. A Uyghur refugee, Gulbaha Haitiwahi, claims that the Chinese want to eradicate the Uyghurs. You've got to hear this. This is a survivor of the Chinese gulag. Her name is Gulbaha Haitiwahi, and she spoke to France Venkat about the Uyghur refugee and the system there. So Gulbaha Haitiwahi lives in France, belongs to China's Uyghur minority, a mainly Muslim community from the northwestern provinces of Xinjiang. Now, back in 2016, her life changed dramatically. Summoned to return to China under a spurious pretext, she was thrown into prison, then sent to a re-education camp. She recounts the appalling conditions of her detention in a new book entitled Survivor of the Chinese Gulag. The Chinese, quote, want to wipe out the culture and the tradition of the Uyghurs and eradicate the Uyghurs themselves, she told Franz Venkat. So let's listen to this report. It's truly fascinating. Bear with me a moment as I bring that up. Okay, one second. One moment here. Okay, we'll see if we can get this started.
Afternoon. This is the France 24 interview. Today we're meeting with a survivor of the Chinese Gulag. That's the name of the book that you just wrote and published. Gulbaha Haitiwahi, good afternoon. Now you say Gulag, of course you mean these internment camps. There are tons of them in Xinjiang region in China. You were held in one of these until your release a year and a half ago now. There are still hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of Uyghurs, this Muslim minority, mainly Muslim minority, that you're a member of. Now, your story is unique and dramatic. You lived in France for around 15 years, but your life took a dramatic turn in November 2016. You received a phone call on the line. That phone call was your previous employer, located in Xinjiang, China. What did he ask you at that time?
He asked me to go back to China. He said I had to go back to apply for early retirement. I said, can't somebody else do that for me? And my colleague said, no, you've got to come to China. You've got to do it yourself. So I bought a return ticket. I was planning to spend 2 weeks there. I could never have imagined that I was going to be deprived of my family and my freedom for 3 years.
You were thinking that they'd use that employer to trick you, to make you come back to Xinjiang. Now, when you did get back to your previous company, go back, you were arrested by the police right away. What did they accuse you of? What did they question you about?
They showed me a photo of my daughter who was at a demonstration, and there was an East Turkestan flag at that demonstration. They threw it in my face.
A demonstration that was in Paris?
Yes. They said I was the mother of a terrorist and the wife of a terrorist. With hindsight, I think they were trying to take revenge on my husband because he came with me to China in 2012 and 2014. And at that time, the Chinese security services asked him to spy on the Uyghur community in France. He refused. I think the whole thing was a trap.
Now, at that point, they released you. They took your passport away from you. When you went back to get your passport again, a month later, you were arrested right away. Then you were taken, once and for all, to a prison. Not yet the re-education camps in Xinjiang, but the prison conditions are particularly horrific. Can you describe this for us?
The conditions were absolutely dreadful in that prison. normalde all the women were shackled. The cells were designed for 9 to 10 women, but there were up to 40 of us there. They forced us to spend hours outside, and yet the temperatures went down to minus 30. There were blinding neon lights all day and all night. We had to keep watch at night, and we couldn't sleep very well at all. We were hungry all the time, and our clothing was very thin.
Yes, and I believe I've heard that you were shackled to your bed. What happened? Did they tell you why? What were the conditions?
They chained me to the bed for 20 days. I said, why are you doing this? Have I broken the rules? And they said, we don't know, but there are orders from higher up.
4 months later, this time you were then transferred to one of these re-education camps. You yourself said that they told you it was a favor. They told you these were schools. That's what the guards said. They were schools. So then you were subjected to brainwashing. There were classes lasting 11 hours a day. What did they teach you during these classes? What were the conditions?
At first, we thought that it really was a school, and we were quite happy to go there. But as soon as we got there, it was obvious that it wasn't really a school at all. We had to spend 11 hours a day seated in the classroom, learning law, the Chinese language, and Chinese history. And we also had to learn patriotic songs every day. On Fridays, we were tested on the week's classes. We had to keep a diary, and we were supposed to write our thoughts and ideas in the diary. But unfortunately, we couldn't write our real thoughts because we had a tutor who would collect in the diaries every few days, and he would read what we'd written. So we had no choice. We had to praise the Chinese Communist Party and say how glad we were to be there.
Who were these other detainees? Were all of them Uyghurs? And what were they claimed to have done?
Yes, they were all Uyghurs. They were there for various reasons. Some were there for wearing a headscarf. Or they were there because they knew people who lived abroad, or they traveled abroad, or because they picked up a phone call from somebody who was on a blacklist. But they didn't even know who those people were. And many of the women didn't know why they were there at all.
Like other women who were released from re-education camps, in your book you talk about these injections that you were given several times. Did you know what was in these syringes?
Twice a year we were given injections. They told us it was for the flu. But after the injection, a lot of the women stopped having their period. And a lot of the younger women were really worried that they might not be able to have children afterwards. I had my suspicions even back then, but I had no evidence. It's only when I got back to France that I heard about Uyghur women undergoing mass sterilizations.
Then in November 2018, you were convicted to 7 years in prison after a trial that just took a few minutes. It was claimed that you'd forged administrative documents. You went back to prison, back to shackled feet. At the same time, your daughter fought tirelessly for your release, Gulmar. We met with her at the time at France 24. Did you know she was doing this? Do you think that contributed to your release?
At that time, I had no idea that my daughter or France were campaigning. But when I got back to France, I realized that France had really treated me like a French citizen and had done a lot of work through the consulate. And I also heard about my daughter's campaign.
En 2019, you were finally released. They didn't really tell your why, for that matter. Just before that, they placed you under house arrest for several months. They wanted to put you back in good physical condition. What happened during the house arrest? What did they tell you?
I'd got very thin. I didn't even weigh 50 kilos. So I suppose that the Chinese were worried that if I got out in that state, it wouldn't look good. It would reflect badly on them. And the way they treated the Uyghurs would come to light. And I think that's why they decided they would help me recover and help me put on a bit of weight. And that's why they looked after me in this apartment.
In your book, you talk about genocide as a very strong word to describe the Chinese government's policy in Xinjiang. Why did you select that word?
In the prisons and the camps, we're not allowed to speak our own language. The Chinese are trying to force us to assimilate to their own culture and their traditions. They want to wipe out the culture and the tradition of the Uyghurs and eradicate the Uyghurs themselves. And then there are lots of inter-ethnic marriages. If a Han marries a Uyghur, they get 150,000 yuan from the state, and there's an awful lot of propaganda about these marriages in order to encourage inter-ethnic marriages. On Uyghur religious holy days, the Uyghurs can't even go to the mosque. And I think, really, that all of that amounts to cultural genocide.
You still have your sister and your mother in Xinjiang. Have you had news of them since your release, especially since the publication of the book?
Since I've been back in France, I call my family in China every week. But we only have a very short conversation, and there's a lot that I can't say. I just check that they're all right, and they don't even know that I've written this book.
Do you fear for them?
At the beginning, when I started the book, I was really very worried. After all, I hadn't done anything to harm China, and they still stole 3 years of my freedom from me, so I thought they could certainly harm my family if I wrote this book. But then I thought it over, and I think I haven't exaggerated anything. I haven't lied. I haven't insulted anybody in this book. All I've done is told the truth. So, no, I'm not afraid.
Thank you for your testimonial. The name of your book, Survivor of Chinese Gulag, by the Equator Publishing House. Thank you for watching. Stay tuned to France 24.